Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we'll be taking a deep dive into the Next Energy Solar Fund Investment Trust. We're going to be looking at some of the main developments this year and the attractions for investors. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by Stephen Rosser, who is the Investment Director and UK Counsel for the Next Energy Solar Fund. Stephen, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So before we get into the depths of the trust, Stephen, it would be good if we could set the scene, please, with a brief introduction, first of all, to yourself, but as well as the investment trust, please.
Really happy to do so. So, yes, as you've mentioned, I'm the investment director and also UK counsel at Next Energy Capital in the UK. We are the investment advisor and investment manager for Next Energy Solar Fund. My job day to day is to look after all of the business of Next Energy Solar Fund. So that's everything from, you know, the operation of the solar plants that we have within the portfolio through to the growth of that portfolio and the investments we make to drive shareholder value. I obviously work very closely with a very specialist team at Next Energy Capital to deliver all of that. And we're very proud this year for Next Energy Solar Fund to have celebrated our 10th year anniversary and 10 years of a progressive dividend as well. So really, really strong track record there.
And that's one thing that we are going to discuss in some detail later on in the podcast, Stephen. It is the dividend. It's a very attractive dividend. And as you said, a progressive dividend policy there. So we're going to go into a little bit more detail about the dividend later on. But I think it would be good to start with looking at the macro picture, looking at the macro perspective. Of course, operating in solar, we're going to be discussing the portfolio and the assets. But to start with, I think it'd be good if we could take a step back and look at the factors that are supporting solar at the moment. So when you're sitting, Stephen, what are the main drivers supporting shareholder returns in solar assets at the moment?
I think it's a really interesting question. And the way I like to think of it is across five main dimensions. Happily, they all start with P. So we'll just sort of step through. They are their policy, popularity, a proven technology, pricing, and most importantly, right now, potential. If I just step through those in very briefly. So in the UK, from a policy perspective, particularly since the election, but even before the most recent general election, a very clear ambition to achieve net zero and a very clear ambition to roll out solar across the UK as part of that energy transition. And it's been really pleasing to see the commitment that the incoming government has shown to driving that agenda at pace. So we've got some, I think, incoming additional or incremental targets around 2030, which I'm sure we'll come to hear about in weeks ahead from the Solar Task Force and other initiatives that are going on. We've obviously seen the government enhance the CFD budget since taking office, which has really helped with early stage deployment of some new projects. We've also seen approaching 2 gigawatts of solar projects being consented through the NSIP program since the government has taken office. So, you know, very clear commitment and direction of travel, which I think augurs well for the future in the sense of the government setting out its stall very clearly. From a popularity perspective, just moving on, what I mean by that is you know, broad public support. Obviously, there are localized areas of objection. There always are with anything in the planning system, whatever one is developing. But on the whole, public support for solar projects and solar farms particularly is actually amongst the highest, if not the highest, of all the renewable generating technologies. And we've seen that borne out through a variety of independent studies as well conducted over the last few years. It's been really interesting to see, you know, as an operator of a portfolio of 102 assets, the vast majority of which are in the UK, really interesting to see how that changes as well through the life cycle of a solar farm. So even where one does experience sort of pockets of localized objection through the initial planning phases, once the plant is constructed and operating, actually what we see is that they're very quickly adopted into the local community as a local amenity. And quite a lot of our solar farms are used, or the perimeters of them used by, you know, dog walkers and the like. And they sort of fit into, you know, the landscape and everyday way of life. So it's they are generally very, very well supported around the country, which is really important. The third of the five P's is a proven technology. So, I mean, I'd started in this industry, when solar was in its infancy. It's super exciting today to be able to talk about solar as being a mainstream, mature technology, and with everything that brings. So we've learned a huge amount over the last certainly 15 odd years in this country, and more beyond. Internationally, in terms of how to deploy and optimize these assets effectively to drive returns for shareholders and investors generally. The fourth is pricing. So in the last 10 years, the cost of solar PV components has come down by about 90%, which is enormous, really. Precipitated by some initial momentum created through sort of subsidy support to drive scale and economies of scale and drive deployment. But I think we are very well placed today to be able to deploy quickly, and solar now is the cheapest and quickest to deploy of all of the renewable generating technologies, which really, really plays in its favor as we focus on that transition to net zero. And then the last P is potential. So I think we've got about 16 gigawatts of solar on the system right now. We're targeting 70 gigawatts as part of a net zero transition. So there's a huge amount to go after. And over those 10 years, with the module prices and the other component prices having come down, what we've also seen is a huge acceleration in the capacity and the efficiency of the modules. Particularly so that we could install, for example, plant of the same capacity in somewhere between a third and half the footprint of one of the original solar farms, which is very exciting for a portfolio like Next Energy Solar Funds, as we think to the future and think about how we repower those assets over time and the capacity that we can install as those assets come to the natural point of their life and are ready to be repowered. The alternative way of thinking about that is that we could install, you know, the same capacity as we currently have, using less space, leaving space therefore to do some of the good work we do, or some more of the good work we do around natural capital, for example, in terms of the way we use that surrounding land, or maybe even deploying co-located energy storage, for example. So a huge amount of opportunity and potential there as well. So I'd say those are the main macro factors really creating the positivity around solar as we sit here today.
Thank you. So I just want to look at the comparison with the UK to overseas, because of course, Next Energy Solar Fund predominantly focused on the UK, although you do have some assets overseas.
Yeah.
And you've outlined there very kindly and comprehensively, thank you, Stephen, the benefits of operating solar plants in the UK. But what does that look like overseas? I mean, is the UK a real front runner in this area? Are you seeing any other jurisdictions which have as favourable environments for solar assets, or is really, you know, the UK the place to be for solar at the moment?
I think it's a constantly evolving picture, and the way one would answer it, thinking about there are a multitude of different factors, irradiance being one. So, brighter jurisdictions, you might drive more generation from your assets, but also that comes with increased temperatures, which ultimately reduce the asset efficiency. So the UK is somewhere in a Goldilocks zone in terms of the balance of irradiation and temperatures, because it's not it's not sunlight as in sunshine. It's irradiant light that the modules use. So actually, the amount of fluctuation that you see year in, year out in terms of the amount of irradiation that the UK experiences is pretty stable. Maybe a percentage point here or there, up or down year to year, different to other types of generating assets, like wind, for example, which can see swings of, you know, up to 40% year on year. So pretty stable in that sense. But also, I think we've done a huge amount of work with the grid and the regulation and the sort of policy environment in the UK, which has positioned us as a front runner relative to other jurisdictions. Obviously, what we're experiencing on the grid system right now is congestion because, you know, everybody can see the benefit of deployment, and we aren't able to build the grid infrastructure quickly enough to be able to deploy the assets that we want to and need to all around the country to achieve our net zero ambitions. A huge amount of focus amongst government and others to really drive through change in that space. But you know, I think other jurisdictions and other geographies are, in a sense, you know, playing catch up. They've got their own versions of that. Their grid infrastructure will, you know, have evolved in different ways and at different times, and their regulatory systems work in different ways. So they're very different markets. What we have in the UK, and the reason it's attractive here particularly, is that fundamentally it is pretty stable. It's very predictable. It's relatively low risk compared to some of the other jurisdictions. So in terms of long-term predictable returns and performance, the UK remains a really attractive destination.
Fantastic. Made some fascinating points there, especially the one about that the variation year on year in the amount produced, because I'm sure some people would think that, you know, given the cloudy nature of the UK, that you know, that would have an impact. So that's a particularly interesting point. So Stephen, there's over 100 sites at the moment, and this is a question really towards the growth plans for Next Energy. With those sites you have there, do you foresee more sites coming online? Are you expanding, are there plans to expand existing ones? Where does the growth come from for Next Energy going forward?
I think the short answer is yes, absolutely. We foresee growth, and that growth can come from internally within the existing assets. Also from the proprietary development pipeline that we have within the fund, which I'll talk about in a second, you know, and also, you know, from the third party market as that evolves, and particularly as the capital environment it evolves around us over the weeks and months ahead. But so within the portfolio, I briefly touched on the concept of repowering assets as they either come to the end of their useful life or at a point where it makes sense to repower them. And there is huge potential to increase the capacity of the existing assets, or, you know, co-locate them with storage as ways of driving growth, although admittedly that wouldn't increase the number of sites per se on its own. But as Next Energy Capital, on behalf of Next Energy Solar Fund, we have worked really hard to build a proprietary pipeline within the fund itself, which so the fund, you know, owns the rights to a variety of solar and energy storage projects of around 500 million of capital deployment potential, you know, sitting there ready to go when the capital environment is right and ready for us to deploy those projects. So we can really, you know, say we're really primed to drive that growth for the fund. Another source of growth is Next Energy Group's development platform, which is called Starlight. So that has a pipeline of around 10 gigawatts of renewable projects all around the world. and for qualifying sort of relevant assets, NextEnergy Solar Fund has a right of first offer in respect of Starlight projects. So not within the fund, but definitely first access to, you know, another source of attractive, exciting pipeline, all of which before you get to the fact that actually there is still a pretty bright and vibrant third party market for either existing assets or new projects, which we could and are excited or will be excited to deploy capital into when the environment is right to do so.
Thank you. So moving on now, Stephen, I believe at the beginning of this year, you've undertaken a capital recycling program, which I'd like to touch on because it's particularly interesting. So, you know, first of all, you know, there's going to be people listening to this that may not be aware of it. So, you know, first up, please could you explain, you know, what this is and the methods that you're employing within this and the end goal? And also, if we could bring in the interest rate environment as well, and maybe provide some context as to what the program could be doing, or how would that develop if we start to see rates fall a little bit further than what we're seeing at the moment?
Yes, of course. So, the cornerstone here is that NextEnergy Capital is an active and a very proactive manager of these investments. So as the capital raising environment evolved around us, what we realized we needed to look at very carefully was how we would put NextEnergy Solar Fund in a position where it could drive its own growth from within by thinking really intelligently about how and where capital is deployed. We have a very disciplined capital allocation policy. And so combination of that work and thinking resulted in us announcing to the market that we would initiate a program to recycle capital out of some existing investments to downpay against our revolving credit facility, which is a facility that we use to drive growth for the vehicle between equity raises, creating effectively headroom capacity to, you know, make other value accretive investments where those opportunities present themselves. So we put together a portfolio of assets which were, we put them together for a number of, the rationale for putting them together was driven by a number of different reasons. The first of which was accessing the pockets of, you know, dry powder that we could see in the market, particularly where we could see that investors were hoping to deploy capital into new projects but being delayed or constrained by congestion on the grid, and you know, being able to deploy into newly built assets which had effectively run that gauntlet and all of the uncertainties there had been taken away, attractive for that community. So that's one of the drivers. Another is that, you know, as we were talking to investors, there are always questions around the net asset value of the fund and how that is compiled. You know, one of the ways that one can demonstrate the integrity and the prudence of that of the net asset value calculation that we do on a quarterly basis is to realize investments in some of the assets, you know, in line with or ideally favorably to that NAV, which is what we've done. So we have completed two phases of the capital recycling program so far, the first of which was a development project called Hatherdon, where we were managed to achieve a multiple of 2x on the invested capital, which was really important for the fund. A few different ways we achieved that, including optimizing the design of the site so that whereas it had been originally conceived as a 50 megawatt project, we were able to sell it as a 60 megawatt project with development rights for battery storage and also a CFD. really driving value there for investors. The second phase of the capital recycling program was a project called White Cross, which completed in around June this year, Again, sold at a premium to our net asset value of around 14%. Again, really tapping into where we saw the capital in the market looking to deploy. The remaining phases of that program, I can't say too much about them. They remain in competitive third-party processes, and we will continue to bring them forward in a diligent fashion, as you would expect of a proactive asset manager like us.
Thank you. Really interesting points that you made there, Stephen. You know, there is a discount to NAV at the moment. If you look at the share price of NextEnergy Solar Fund, you know, that has been narrowing over the year. But the points that you make there, that when you actually go to market with these assets, it's clear that the public markets at this moment are undervaluing NextEnergy's portfolio there. As I said, that has been narrowing over this year. But I do want to just pick up on the NAV, because the most recent set of results, that there was a very, very minor reduction in NAV. But it's more about a question about the future and what you see driving NAV growth going forward from this point.
So I think it's an excellent point. I think that the key drivers of NAV are, we work very carefully to make sure that we are, wherever possible, not taking management views, and we take external data sources for things like inflation and interest rate projections, which influence discount rate, but also power price curves, and how those then factor into the forward view of the cash flows. It's a very robust process, and as you can imagine, it's audited very rigorously through sort of multiple means to give us a real sense of confidence that that the NAV we have across the portfolio is robust. And as I mentioned, those sort of data points from external market transactions and our own transactions, really support all of that. In terms of driving NAV growth, I think it's back to all of the potential that I've talked about earlier on, with that proprietary pipeline that we have within the platform, the ability we have to grow the value of each of the individual assets over time. Say whether that's through repowering or through co-location with energy storage, or just other intelligent work that we do across the portfolio to drive their value incrementally for investors. So all of which very important. Discount rates, as you'll appreciate, have a significant bearing on the NAV. And coming back to your earlier question about the impact of interest rates, particularly on the capital recycling program, is the context in which you ask it, but also relevant in the context of the NAV and particularly discount rates. I think that is where we will start to see some more positive impact favorably for the fund from a number of different perspectives as we start to see interest rates normalize. I don't expect that we'll see them go back to the historic lows that we'd experienced before the recent uptick. But certainly as they settle out over the next 12 to 18 months, what we should see is that driving positive growth in the net asset value. But it should also mean that the market and liquidity of the shares and the appetite for capital to come back into the sector should come back, because fundamentally these are physical assets, and in NextEnergy Solar Fund they're performing exactly as we would want and expect them to. The revenues that we have are sort of cornerstoned by subsidies, so we've got high degrees of predictability, and fundamentally as we said, the discount to the share price, as a share price discount to the net asset value, it's sort of unjustified from the perspective of the portfolio that we have, but we understand it in the context of that sort of wider macroeconomic environment. And as that starts to settle out, you'd expect to see all of that recover. So the work that we're doing across the investment manager and investment advisor is all about putting the fund in the best position we can to really accelerate its growth when markets turn and are able to support us in driving that.
Yeah, so it seems like there's a number of factors at play there which are really going to be supportive of that NAV going forward, especially if we see lower interest rates. Another factor that I just want to move on to now, Stephen, is one of your P's from the beginning, and its policy, and you know, looking at the change in government that we've seen to the new Labour government, and you did explain at the beginning about what it meant for the trust, but I just want to elaborate on that, and you know, just look at, you know, that change from a Conservative government to a Labour government, you know, is that a material change for Next Energy Solar Fund? Do you see any real tailwinds from the new agenda that we're seeing from the Labour government?
Perhaps not additional tailwinds. It would be very easy to think that they weren't there before. I think that the thing that's different now post-election is the tone and the rhetoric is very different. And the sort of demonstration of commitment, and particularly a demonstration of commitment to trying to get to some clarity so that investors can have the confidence that that the environment isn't going to change around around us all as things evolve. So what we see is a high degree of consistency from previous administration to current administration in terms of the size and scale of ambition, not without its challenges, and those are sort of common and recognised, particularly in terms of grid. We see that there is pretty clear focus on trying to tackle all of those things. But current administration's desire to talk about it that in a way that is clear, consistent, sets out a deliverable pathway, and almost provides that confidence that that's the direction we are as a country heading in, has definitely been welcome. We're expecting some important announcements over the weeks and months ahead in terms of the shape of GB Energy, for example, which I think will be quite a complementary vehicle for wider net zero transition, although fundamentally not focused on mature technologies like solar. So we hope it will be supportive but not disruptive for us. The Solar Task Force, I gather that will be releasing its reports over the coming weeks ahead, setting out some ambitious and actionable targets as well. All of which just creating that sort of public narrative that is clear about the direction we're heading, the ambition that we have as a country, the case for investment, and providing all of those reasons to be positive and excited about the future for solar in the UK and from our perspective, particularly for Next Energy Solar Fund.
Thank you. So moving on to the final point here, and in my view, one of the biggest attractions of course, the dividend, progressive dividend policy there. I believe the current yield is around 10%, just over. Could we speak, Stephen, about that? The policy there, the driver behind the dividend increases, how that is set to impact shareholder returns going forward, the influences that are happening within the assets, this progressive policy that you have, does that look like it remains supportive going forward? And I believe you have a dividend target cover as well, so if you could just touch on that as well, that'd be fantastic, please.
Yeah, so the dividend target for this financial year is 8.43p, which is an increase on prior year. Ultimately, the dividend is a decision of the independent board of directors. We obviously work very closely with them to map out what makes sense from an investor's perspective, but also from a how we drive how we sort of deploy all of our capital to drive the, you know, the growth and best value for investors. You know, we're very proud of having a progressive policy and having a 10-year track record of having increased the dividend that we pay to shareholders, and that it's cash covered. You know, that's a really important component of the way forward. So, you know, we see that continuing. As we talk to some of our more institutional investors, it's been interesting over the last while to, you know, hear the transition more towards a total shareholder return play. And that is particularly true given where the share price is currently relative to the NAV. And as I say, we see that as being an unjustified discount, and therefore there is potential or significant potential there for that growth in share price as part of a total return play as well. So a positive outlook. We would just retain our focus on delivering that for investors.
Thank you very much. Just a quick note to listeners, do check out the UK Investor Magazine website and the Investment Trust Centre, where you'll be able to see Next Energy Solar Fund's page and get all of their latest commentary, fact sheets, reports, and such like, as well as some recorded presentations that we did earlier on this year. We want a deeper dive into the trust. So, Stephen, thank you very much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.